So I usually, when I'm preparing for a sermon, pray that I find the right thing to say, and I prayed a little bit extra hard this time. I know sometimes I'm preparing for weeks, and sometimes, you know, it's a day or two, but I guess this is what I've got for you. So John 10:27 through 30 said, "My sheep listen to my voice." I know we've talked about the sheep and what they represent. They represent rural, but mostly they represent followers. And when you're a follower, it's very important that you follow the right leader. And I recently, or not me recently, but within the last year, I've been introduced to a new term. A Boy Scout leader's wife told me about the term sheeple. I don't know if anybody's heard sheeple, with sheep at the beginning. She defines sheeple as a person who blindly follows others and do what they're told without thinking for themselves. So I guess that's not much of a compliment if you're calling somebody a sheeple. There are many instances in history where sheeple chose to follow the wrong leaders with terrible results. There's a long list of charismatic cult leaders you've probably all heard of. Charles Manson, Jim Jones, David Koresh, who somehow convinced their followers to commit murder, engage in mass suicide by drinking cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, or burning themselves alive in an underground bunker in Waco, Texas. So those are some of the things that can happen if you're following the wrong leader. And there's other spiritual leaders who seem to think they know when the world's going to end. You might have also heard of Harold Camping. He wrote a book in 1992, predicted that the world was going to end on the same year I graduated high school, 1994. We all know that didn't happen. And his thing is, when he predicts an end of the world and it doesn't happen, he predicts a new one. I know he predicted May 21st, 2011 was the end of the world, and he went so far as to purchase 2,000 billboards. Like full-size billboards, so this guy must have a little bit of money. Countless radio ads to let people know that was the end, but that date also came and went. So, and sadly, every time someone makes a prediction, I remember the Hale-Bopp comic, where there's a cult that they all, I think, sold their worldly possessions, you know, made some non-reversible life decisions, thinking that after Hale-Bopp came, there'd be no more planet, and then, of course, they woke up the next morning and find out that life does go on. I know there's lines in the Bibles that say that no one knows, you know, Jesus is coming back, but nobody knows the date and time, so the fact that people are trying to predict it show again that they're bad leaders. So the question remains, who should we follow? And a lot of people would say follow the church, but even the church is imperfect. I'm a student and teacher of history, so I can give you examples of where the church got things wrong. I'm currently teaching 7th grade history, which goes from about 750 BC to about 1500 AD, and we learn about things like the Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, excommunicating Martin Luther, papal indulgences, putting Galileo on house arrest for having the audacity to say that the earth goes around the sun when the church was currently teaching, or the other way around, sun around the earth. So there have been interesting changes in our lifetime. I don't remember, nobody talks about purgatory anymore. There's fewer masses in Latin. And there's been many changes, positive changes about the Eucharist and lay ministry that resulted from Vatican II. Anyone knows my past knows that I have not been a Catholic my entire life. I was born to a Catholic mother and Protestant father, so I spent the majority of my life as a Methodist, and having gone to college, I made many friends who were Jewish, Muslim, Disciples of Christ, because we went to Hiram College, and I have some atheist friends, and my mother is currently active in a non-denominational church. So I realize that there's many different ways of worshiping and determining right from wrong. And one of the reasons I was praying today, whenever I talk about anything controversial, you know, my job as a teacher is learning to tread lightly. Because, you know, being a history teacher, when there's an election coming up, students are always like, well, what do you think about the candidates? And I know that if I say, Trump's the best president ever, I'm going to get a lot of angry phone calls from about maybe half the parents in my class. And if I say Trump was the worst president ever, I'm going to get angry phone calls from the other parent, the other half of the parents in my class. So I try to stay neutral like Switzerland. I usually say something like, you know, if they ask me which candidate I like better, I think in 2020 I said, I really don't care for either of them. I said, this country's very diverse, half the country's women, and somehow both the Republican and Democratic Party both chose crusty old white men that have a lot of baggage. So I try to stay neutral like that, and then I don't get any angry phone calls, so that's what I try to do. Most recent, of course, usually, as I mentioned, my sermons have a lot to do with what I do. I've been teaching for 24 years. I know when Father Randy gives his sermons, and he talks about his experience as a drug and rehab counselor. You know, Father Greg has a lot of experience with working with people with disabilities and, you know, being a caregiver for somebody. So, you know, our life experiences tend to color what we're talking about. Of course, you know, I know Father Randy and Father Greg have also brought in topics like what's going on in Ukraine. And, of course, the most recent controversial topic is Supreme Court getting ready to overturn Roe versus Wade. So I'm going to do my very best to try to stay neutral like Switzerland. I learned, no, it can be difficult, topics like that. So I currently work with seventh grade, as I mentioned. I used to work with high school students, and I know, I can't remember the exact year, but a few years back when I was a high school English teacher, I heard, you know, I usually do, see, there's debate club, and then there's also, as an English teacher, I'm supposed to teach them, right, persuasive, you know, persuasive paragraphs, and of course the best way to do that is pick controversial topics. So kids always choose things like abortion, gun control, you know, I guess, war versus peace. And I know when, you know, one of my students from the past was talking about a law that Ohio is currently enacting, part of the heartbeat law. One of the students was saying, well, if this law goes through, a teenage girl who gets raped would be forced to have a rapist baby. And, you know, again, I'm supposed to stay neutral on both those things, so I try to. But another thing I've taught about China, I've learned, one of the things I like about being a teacher is I learn a lot of stuff too, because I went to school myself, went to college, went to high school, but a lot of things have changed. And, you know, I just looked up China's one baby policy. I don't know if people are familiar with that, but in China, we have 400 million people in our country right now. They have 1.2 billion. So from the years 1980 to 2015, they had a one-child policy. And of course, when I taught that, a lot of people asked, how did the government enforce such a policy? So I had to explain that after the first child, there was often forced sterilization so that women wouldn't get pregnant a second time. And then in rural places where women had babies at home, there was, you know, some instances of forced abortions where the government made a woman that wanted to have a baby get rid of it. And I think we all agreed that that's a horrible thing, and we're thankful that we don't live in China. We currently live in a country where women are free to choose the number of children that they want to have, using methods of birth control and whatnot. And I know, again, that's another controversial topic, birth control. I personally believe that abortion is wrong. I would advise any woman who's pregnant to keep her baby. It's a miracle from God, and I would tell her that if she says she doesn't want to raise it, you know, there's always the option of putting it up for adoption, but I also understand that there's not everybody believes that I do. I've had three, you know, I have three beautiful children, but I think Angie would admit that she did a little bit more of the work in bringing them into the world.
A little bit more?
Okay, a little bit's the wrong word, a lot more. She has, you know, endured the pain of labor three times. I've endured it zero times. She has stretch marks. I'm not going to look too much. But I mean, all women,
yes.
Some stretch marks. She mentioned that her shoe size expanded permanently due to the excess weight of carrying around not just one person, but two people. She had to buy all new shoes after, you know, after pregnancy two or three, you know, made her feet not fit in her current set of shoes. What else? Also, she had perfect teeth before she became a mother. Angie had perfect teeth, not a single cavity. And then after having Eva, Angie got her first cavity. She might have said something like that, and just, why? You know, after all these years, why do I have a cavity now? And they said, sometimes the baby borrows some of your calcium. So all mothers know that there's a lot of things that, a lot of, you know, morning sickness. Angie tried ginger cookies when morning sickness made her so nauseous she couldn't eat anything, to only to find that ginger didn't really help her because she didn't like ginger. And, Chinese food, which she used to love. We couldn't go anywhere near a Chinese restaurant. She saw it, smelled it, or anything. And these are, as I said, just some of the physical problems. We also know a couple who are good Catholics. They adamantly oppose birth control of any kind except for natural family planning. They've so far had four children. Each pregnancy has been a little bit more difficult for this woman. Her first pregnancy, she had a mild case of gestational diabetes. With each new pregnancy, it got a little bit worse, to the point where now she has a permanent case of, and this is where my medical, I don't know if she has hyperglycemia or hypo, but she's not been pregnant in years, and she still has to be really careful with what she eats, or she can slip into a coma and die. And her husband shared with me that their doctor strongly advised them that they didn't have any more children because it would be a high-risk pregnancy both for the mother and for her unborn child. So, again, with all these headlines, I learned some things recently, that one thing being the Jewish faith allows abortion if that pregnancy is threatening the life of the mother. So there's also many psychological issues related to pregnancy. We know of a couple who had one child, and due to the extreme, they only had one child, but due to the extreme postpartum depression she had after giving birth, Some women might have had depression before getting pregnant, and if this was an unplanned pregnancy, or pregnancy due to rape, or maybe a pregnancy by an abusive, you know, abusive spouse or abusive boyfriend, that depression is not going to go away and likely to get much worse. And I've been blessed my whole life. I've been born, you know, in my family. I have wonderful resources, both financially and, you know, wonderful families on both sides that are supportive. But I understand that not all women have that. Some women are in a, like I said, an abusive relationship where that the man that they're with might cut them, you know, purposely cut them off from their family members or friends, you know, because that's kind of how abuse works. Another thing that I want to share on a personal note. In the past, Angie and I have suffered some in the form of multiple miscarriages. We were lucky enough to have three wonderful children, but we have also had several miscarriages. And these are traumatizing for both of us, although I would again say maybe more so for Angie. I had to deal with the emotional impact of losing a child through miscarriage, but she had the physical, and thing, you know, also, yeah, physical things due to what's going on, and then, like, you know, I think there's hormones involved and all that kind of stuff. So, and, you know, it was an extremely horrible thing to go through, but one thing that would make it even more horrible, I know if, you know, certain laws go through, in addition to dealing with that loss of a miscarriage, I'm thinking that in some, you know, at some point in the future, you might have people asking questions like, was this intentional or something like that? So on top of the loss you've already had, having to deal with that kind of thing. So in summary, I'd like to thank all mothers across the whole globe for what they do, what they go through in order to put us here. You all know none of us would be here if it weren't for our mothers. And one thing that I think we should give them is, I think we should honor all mothers by not assuming that everything's black and white. We should not assume every woman who's had an abortion or thought about having one is a bad person. We've only experienced the world from our perspective. We should not pretend that we know what it's like to live in someone else's shoes. There are many out there who have had experiences much worse than our own and are simply trying to survive in the real world, making decisions when there's no good option. Having the judgment of the rest of the world doesn't help. As Jesus said, let those among you without sin cast the first stone. Thank you.